This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book title is In the Silver Maple Tree, The Adventure of an Impetuous Young Girl Captivated by God. And joining me from California is that impetuous young girl, Ginger Lawrence. Welcome to the program.
Okay, I'm in Oregon, however.
Oh, you're in Oregon. Well, you moved. No, yes. No, you weren't in California. That's my mistake. Yes. Oregon's not bad.
Jacksonville, Oregon.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Well, nice to make your acquaintance. I notice on the back of your book you have a photo of a, I guess, a ranch situation or a youth ranch situation called Young Life's Silver Cliff Ranch. Is that related or have a special significance to you, or will this to the reader?
Oh, it will. It is a very big significance to me. I spent 5 summers there when I was in high school and worked there. And the book, I included in the book stories about it. So,
and that was just book. That was just a handful of years ago, I'm assuming. You you have talked about it being a young girl in a silver maple tree. What does the silver maple tree have to do with your story? This listeners, is autobiographical in texture and in style. Is that the right way to describe this?
Right. The silver maple tree was out at the end of our property. And I was adopted, and I was a kid that loved adventure. And sometimes my adventure took me too far and not thoroughly honest. But by the time I was 9, I had been convicted totally that I needed a savior. And the silver maple tree was where I climbed up in the silver maple tree. And I sang my way into the kingdom. I just... knew that there was a God that loved me, and I never questioned it after that. I gave my heart to him.
Wow. And that stuck, apparently.
Oh, it stuck. Yes, it stuck.
You have said that the story takes place in, am I correct, that it took place in the 40s and 50s. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Wow.
Right. Well, I was born in 33, well, so I'm 85.
Wow. You definitely don't sound like it. And what's encouraging about your conversational style is that there is a lot of enthusiasm still there. And when you reflect back on that young girl of 8, 9, 10 years old, you still have a passion for your history and what happened back then.
Oh, I do. Yes, I had wonderful parents that adopted my sister and I together, and they were Christians and fairly new Christians. I mean, they hadn't been raised, you know, as believers, but had come to know the Lord a little bit later and just before we were adopted, and they were enthusiastic. And my father wrote a poem that is in the Silver Maple Tree, that if a person gets that book, they'll read it. Wonderful poem.
Is it something that you remember by? Is it something that you have committed to memory, perhaps? Or do we need to find it and read it? Would that be something that would cheer up the audience?
I can read it to you. It's on my wall.
Oh, fabulous. Please do so.
I have it framed, and it was published in the Oregon Journal of Portland. So it's a great piece. It's called Which Will It Be? And I'm walking all over my house here. This is it. Which will it be? When you've gathered all the loose ends and mended broken strands, you are feeling proud and happy with the way your lifeline stands. You review the path you've traveled and you feel inclined to cheer. Why not step a bit and ponder? Just where do I go from here? Life is short and quite uncertain. Time has never ceased to roll. You are the master of your life. But who's the captain of your soul? When the thread of life is broken, you do not cease to be. Take a thought about hereafter. What about eternity? Existence does not stop with death. Time still does not cease to roll. Earth to earth and dust and ashes was not spoken of the soul. You've been busy thinking small thoughts. Did you ever think of God? In his image we are fashioned. On his footstep stool we have trod. Have you ever paid him homage? Have you ever paid him rent? Even so, he will forgive you if you your sins repent. Jesus hung amid derision, crucified for you and me. It depends on your decision where you'll spend eternity. God in mercy made provision to blot out your sins and mine. Remember them no more against us. Make our lives to be divine. It's a gift. We may accept it. Our choice, hope will depend. On our choice, hope will depend. For him belongs the kingdom, power, glory, without end.
Well, beautifully done. Absolutely beautifully done. And as a church pew warmer myself, and sometimes I get kind of motivated, that beautifully tells the story of redemption and faith in a very succinct manner. I can understand why it would have been published or shared. In writing this book, when did the idea come to you? I need to share my story not only with my family, but perhaps the folks beyond. When did that come, and how long did it take to complete?
Well, I'll tell you when I wanted to really begin to share my story. Well, I sang a lot as a young person, had lots of lessons, vocal lessons, and I sang all over the United States because we were always moving. And I loved doing that, but I didn't love just sharing. I thought I had to sing my testimony. But as I began to realize that I was a little bit of a Pharisee, and then God worked in my life, and that was as I was much older, and I had read a couple of books that were wonderful and gave me the idea that I really needed to share more about who he was. And I love it. I do it a lot now. In fact, I have a really fun time when I meet up with somebody that asks me for money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have $3? Do you have $5?
Mm.
Yes. And I have it here, but I want to pray for you first. And so I pray for them. Oh, it is amazing, Jay. These people are standing there weeping or staring into space.
Wow.
And so it's one way I can give my testimony or tell them who Jesus is. The God of the universe loves them. And I always am adding that, of course, in my prayer for them. So it was probably about 12 years ago when I began to see that I needed for God to work some more in me. Reading Brennan Manning's books was good also. Signature of Jesus, and a few other ones, Abba's Child. Anyway, does that answer your question?
Oh, it certainly does, and a very inspiring story. You know, many of us who are many in society who are church members are very satisfied just to go to church, come home, and forget their faith until the next service time, which may be a Sunday morning, Sunday evening, or maybe a Wednesday night if they're really fanatical. You have internalized and externalized your faith, which is certainly a major part of Christianity, those who are people of faith. Your book is written, would you say, in a conversational style? I mean, some biographical or autobiographical sketches and books are somewhat, you know, boring. They're just not much there. Yours is a storytelling style, is it not?
Yes, it is. It's a story. And young people, even my neighbor, I said, I heard that you did a book signing, you were gone for quite a while. I said, oh, well, I'm back now. And yes, it went well. And I remembered the book on my car seat. So I opened my car door and I handed it to her. And she said, really, you're giving this to me? I said, oh, yes, it's just a little thing. And she couldn't wait to start reading it. And she said, when I finish it, can we have tea? And I said, oh, yes, we can. And so we did just last week. And she, as it turns out, she was a believer already, but just loved my story. And so people of all ages seem to like it. One of the pastors at the church I go to, he said, I just read a little bit every day, Ginger, and it just blesses me.
Beautiful.
So anyway.
What do you want the reader to take away from your work? Was there an underlying message that you weren't even aware of as you were writing this that popped to the surface? Or did you complete everything that you wanted to say as far as telling the story and inspiring people?
Well, I hope that I inspired people. I completed a lot. You know, I think that I finished it, but as I worked, I prayed all the time that God would use it, that he would give me the exact words to say, and that it wouldn't be about me, that it would be about the God of the universe that loves us, that loved a little girl that was adopted at age 2. And was a little bit of an imp. I mean, she was, I was pretty energetic and I did a lot of stuff, but I've learned how to confess and how to get rid of little things that need to be taken care of because God does it.
Were you the 3-year-old hiding under the kitchen sink or was that someone else in your family?
I was.
It
yes.
was you. Mm-hmm.
I was.
Did that cause any kind of
for
concern?
An hour.
An hour. My
Pardon?
Goodness. Did that cause any concern by your parents?
No, but I'll tell you, it really did concern me because I didn't know what to do. I was, you know, once you start that, you hate to say, I'm here, you know, because I knew I was wrong.
Wow.
I knew at that age that I was dead wrong and that I needed to be different. But by the time I heard the pastor come in the back door and my mother began to sob real down deep because she just knew she had lost me.
Wow.
Oh, you know, God brings all these things into our life to teach us. And that was a real teaching moment for me.
I notice also you've mentioned that at 8 years of age, what is the story about the deaf school? What did that have to do with your life?
Well, I had a mastoid operation when I was age 2. And that was when my parents, my birth father died. And so my mother gave 2 of us up to some relatives in Portland. And they turned out to be wonderful, like I said. And so they were always trying to take care of me because I had a mastoid operation. They really cared. You know, and would take me to the doctor, and I had lots and lots of earaches. But as I went to school, we were always having tests, and I was just flat out dishonest. I was just having so much fun playing games on the doctor that was giving me these tests, or the person, he wasn't a doctor. But finally, he said, you know, because I was clever enough to make it happen every time and make it worse every time. So he thought I was losing my hearing totally and suggested that I be sent to a deaf school in Portland. That's where I thought I was going. But somewhere it changed and I ended up at the one in Salem, which was, I was there then for 9 months without my parents.
Ooh.
And that's where I learned one of the biggest lessons of my life, because they could, the other kids that were there could not hear. I could. And I would, and it was very hard, like going to a movie was very scary for me. And my parents didn't go to a lot of movies, but they had movies there, you know, that were supposed to be funny, you know, in the haunted house. And then I laid all night long and then looked into the darkness, waiting for somebody to come and get me. But I, you know, that was the story on the deaf school. And my parents didn't send me back. I think they suspected that because I rubbed poison oak over my entire body when I was home for Christmas, just trying to stay home. But I had to go back.
Wow.
I had to go back.
You were
something that God used.
You're an impetuous little girl, weren't you? Impetuous and,
yes.
and high energy. Wow. And in spite of all that, you not only survived but have thrived. Your book, where does it leave off? I mean, is it only your real young years, or does it follow your adventure through adulthood?
No, it leaves off at when I graduated from high school and I never went back to the ranches. But that's where it leaves off. And a lot of people have asked me if I would finish. I'm working on my daughter's story. She was adopted also.
Wow.
And it's a much more intense book than this. It's not so many fun and games, but God has done amazing things in her. Wow. So.
This is a great story, and just listening to your enthusiasm and excitement as you recount your life to date, and of the spiritual journey you've been on, obviously, you're someone that my listeners need to get acquainted with you, and if they live in the area, they should come by and listen to you speak, because I have a feeling you should be doing some public speaking as well. The title of this book, again, is In the Silver Maple Tree, The Adventures of an Impetuous Young Girl Captivated by God, and who has joined me from Oregon, Ginger Lawrence, the author. Ginger, where can my listeners get a copy of your book?
Well, they can order it through Amazon. And a lot of the Christian bookstores will be able to get it if they haven't already ordered it and have it in stock.
Beautiful.
In Portland, in this area, there's a bookstore by the name of Evangel, and it's in Grants Pass and also in Medford.
Beautiful.
And they have my book there.
And they can request it from their local bookseller by the name of the author, Ginger Lawrence, or by the name of the tree in the Silver Maple Tree. Thank you for sharing your story. It's been inspiring to talk to you, and I am believing that this book will motivate many others who will read it and find it not only entertaining but also inspirational. Thank you for sharing that with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. More than welcome. Thank you for giving me the privilege to do it.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Congratulations on getting your book published. The effort you put into your work is truly commendable. But what's next? What will happen to all the knowledge you have worked so hard to acquire to produce your book? Here at TogiNet Radio, we can provide you a platform to keep your knowledge working for you through the power of podcast. The subjects our podcasts cover are as varied as the grains of sand on a beach. From life coaching, to military resources, to business success, even to the paranormal. We have a place for everyone. To get started on your next step, call Scott at 903-787-5880 or email him at scott@toginetradio.com. That's S-C-O-T-T at TOGINETRADIO.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is Genesis, A Modern Day Commentary. And underneath that opening line is the word midrash. Joining me from the Houston area in the United States of America is author Judith Fulce. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, Judy, this is a major undertaking, 292 pages. What in the world inspired you, or why did you decide to dig deeply into the study of Genesis and then turn it into a book or a commentary?
Well, my initially when I had the thought to start writing, I did not have a book in mind. I'm an accountant by trade. And I really started writing it for my own learning and possibly for teaching in my local church. I just wanted to take a deeper dive into the scriptures because although I've been a Christian most of my life, there was still a lot of things about the Bible that I didn't understand. So I started writing notes. And about the same time, I traveled on a mission trip to Africa and had the opportunity to come up with a little short teaching in the Old Testament. And so that's really what got me started on this trek. But as I started writing and, I just really started feeling this call to finish writing it. And so I just went verse by verse into it. And, 10 years later, it turned into a book.
Yes. So, would it fall in the general category of an apologetic or apologist view of Genesis, perhaps? I mean, do you go into the history? Do you go into the validity from your perspective? How do you approach the contents or the story and the history of Genesis?
It's really more what I would call a midrash, which is more an illustrative commentary. You know, a commentary is generally going to be, the way whoever's writing it, the author sees the content.
Yes.
And in the old Jewish, the old Jewish rabbis would write what they called midrashes, which are generally just expository, illustrative, sort of pragmatic teachings on a certain book of the Bible. And so that's really what it is more, And the name that I chose for it, Modern Day Commentary, modernity is generally a philosophy that arose in the last 100 years that generally says that religion, has sort of had its rise and fall and it's no longer relevant for modern day society. we're kind of in the secular age.
Yes.
So, of course, the premise of my book was that, no, the scriptures, all of scriptures are still relevant. And even the most, one of the oldest books, Genesis, is still very relevant for modern-day life. And so that's really the premise of the book, is that it's relevant. I try to relate it to, situations, leadership situations, family situations, that still apply to us today so that we can see that, yes, this is the beginning of God's revelation to us, and it is still relevant.
Did you take, I noticed that you have footnotes, so you have certainly validated where your sources are, most of them. Did you, by any chance, do any of the research into the writings of Josephus and his commentaries?
I have a copy of Josephus, and in my studies, what I did was I traveled to the Holy Land about five times during the period I was writing this book. So, I acquired a number of actually on-site books, from the Holy Land while I was traveling, and I did get a copy of Josephus. But it doesn't really focus so much on the history. What it does is it takes it verse by verse, story by story, and sort of explains it in a way that is relevant to modern day life.
Would you say your approach is basically your personal unfolding or revealing of your observations of that scripture, or more than the historical significance, at least as some would view it?
Yes, I wasn't trying to prove the historical, truth of the Bible, although I have done a lot of research into you know, recent archaeology that has been done. You know, one of my favorite sources is Biblical Archaeology Review, which is, you know, just uncovering a plethora of, you know, data that actually corroborates what's in the scriptures. And so it actually is an exciting time, you know, to be rereading the scriptures, because there's so many things that are coming to light through the ongoing archaeology that's being done in the Holy Land right now that,
yes,
you know, a lot of the things are very well corroborated. So where those things existed, I tried to bring them up.
Beautiful. You spent, did you say, almost 10 years in creating the notes and the research in order to get this published? Is that also accurate?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, it is.
And how did you keep track of your journey and your notes and all of that? I maybe because I'm a creative and not a an accountant mind, I lose things. I have to look at my laundry tag sometimes to remember who I am.
Well, I am very organized. And when I started writing, and being an accountant by profession, a lot of what I did was legal writing. And so when you write legally, you know, you learn very quickly when you do your research. So there's two skills I really brought to this task. One was the ability to research, and the other one was the ability to write. Because what I basically did was took very complex tax law and reduced it to something that was understandable on a daily basis during my career. So I worked for the government, and we use a writing style that's actually called plain English. And so when you write in plain English, you know, you try to just make it readable. And so I started with the computer page. And as I would find things, I would, I have a research file, but they would go onto the computer page. So it all was in one file, which is generally how I worked it. Work as well. So,
I
have notes scattered everywhere. It was either the paper file for the research or the computer file.
Well, I have computer files. I have discovered I've got 3 or 4 or 5 external hard drives and stuff. I'd like to send them to you and have you organize them. I think I need some help. This is a very complex task, I would say. Is this something that you had, as an individual, had a desire to write and be an author over the years, or is this something that crept up on you because of your personal study?
It really started with the personal study. I really had no thought of ever retiring and being an author. My idea was I would work and work and work, and then I would retire and be retired. So this was really a surprise. I have to tell you that, you know, once I got started, it was really a compulsion to do it. You know, and a lot of times people will say that when, you know, they get an inspiration from God to do something. It's like, I don't know really why I did it. I just, it started and then it snowballed. I never got what I would call writer's block.
Well,
so,
that's a miracle. That's a miracle in itself. As you begin,
it is a miracle, yes. And the double miracle about it is that at the same time I was teaching myself music.
Oh boy!
Because I sing in my church. I've been singing in my church choir for about 30 years, and I started from knowing nothing. I started learning music theory, and so at the same time I was doing this project, I was also learning music theory, and the miracle of it is I would just get inspired, and then it was like I couldn't write it fast enough. So instead of having writer's block, it was just the opposite with me.
Beautiful.
I would get it, and if I didn't write it down quick enough, I would lose it. So my challenge was to get to the computer almost every single day and make those notes, because, you know, the thoughts and the inspiration would just come and it would flow.
That happens to a lot of writers. I talk to writers, of course, all the time. I've done, you know, 1,600 interviews already in my attempted career. And some writers will take, again, a number of years to complete a project, and others will take a lesser amount of time because they're writing from imagination and inspiration of the moment and let the characters drive the storyline. In this instance,
right,
you're dealing with history and also with stories that many are familiar with. Was there anything as you began to your personal study and journey through Genesis, that dropped off, that jumped off the page that you hadn't discovered or seen before, and it took you in a direction that you weren't expecting?
Well, I have to say I learned an awful lot. And, of course, when I started the project, I didn't know anything about Hebrew. Hebrew was not a language I took in college or anything like that.
Yes.
So I had to actually learn Hebrew. And the one thing that's actually, I don't know if you could say shocked or surprised or delighted me, was the fact that, you know, even in those what we consider tedious, boring genealogies that mm-hmm. we come through in Genesis, if you actually look at those names, they all mean something. And if you translate them into the Hebrew, which is why I put so many footnotes in there, because I really wanted something that, you know, someone could just pick up, you know, an average person could just pick up and get some benefit from it. Well, if you look at all the Hebrew translations of those names, they actually impart a deeper meaning than if you just, you know, read through the text and not know what those names mean. So I was astounded at how deeply interrelated everything was, more so than I thought when I first started. Like I said, this is magnificent. I understand now why the Bible is the best-selling book of all time, because it, you know, you can press it, and when you go into it deeper, you find more. And it was just a delightful learning experience for me. It was pretty amazing.
What you're describing to me, then, and for the listeners, is there probably are some good sermon outlines that maybe bubbled to the surface, or at least can bubble to the surface just from that research and your discoveries.
Yes, absolutely. And I've never seen in any other commentary people actually take the time to... It's called the Table of Nations, where, you know, it goes through this history of, okay, you know, after Adam and Eve, and then we had, you know, Cain and Abel. Well, here we have how the nations were formed, and, you know, it goes through all these long genealogies. But if you actually, I actually go through and analyze all of that and, you know, relate a lot of it to what those Hebrew names actually mean. And it actually helps to tell the story of what was going on. So that, I don't think you're going to find, I don't know of anywhere else you'll find that.
Can a reader go to page 85 instead of starting at page 1 and, you know, do a study out of maybe one particular chapter that they're interested in to begin with?
Yes, because what I tried to do, I have a table of contents that is... tied to the verses. And so if they're interested in a certain, you know, chapter or verse, you know, they can look in the table of contents and find out where in the book they need to read. You know, say if they want to read the story of Joseph, yes, they can go to the story of Joseph and start reading there.
Excellent.
And one thing I do is I tie in New Testament verses that actually relate, because another premise of the book is that this is the first story in God's whole book of Revelation, and actually the whole Bible is one story of the redemption, of God's plan of redemption for mankind. This is the beginning, and because it's the beginning, you know, there are other verses elsewhere that tie in, and so I do tie in some of that. And so it, unlike most commentaries that just might talk about verses in a certain book, I actually try to tie what's going on in Genesis to some things that happen later.
Beautiful.
So it is. It would be good for sermons, and it would be good for a deeper understanding of, I want to say, theology of some of what's going on in Genesis.
Yeah, you would describe this then as a book for every man. It's not just something that a theologian would want to gravitate toward, but it's easy reading.
That's right, because it's not what I would call written in scholarly language. You or I or anybody, and that was really my point. I wanted something that would help me as really a lay person to understand this better, because a lot of times when I tried to pick up, you know, other books, there was a gap between my knowledge and the knowledge, you know, at the level they were writing. So what I tried to do was bring that down. You know, if I needed to define something, I defined it. If I needed to explain something, I explained it. I do throw a little history in there, you know, for background, so that they can kind of understand the setting as well. But The main thing I would say about the book is that it's probably more than you ever read about Genesis before, and it's readable.
Beautiful.
You can understand it no matter what your level. If you're a new Christian or even if you're a pastor, you can get something out of it.
Beautiful. I have a feeling, I don't have a feeling. I was going to say, are you going to be the next Matthew Henry commentary? But I don't think that's going to happen. you've got one book under your belt. Are you inspired to tackle other books of the Bible and do the same thing, the same kind of study?
Yes, actually I am. I have several projects that I'm working on right now, because the story is, when I first started working on this, I was still working, and so that's one of the reasons it took me so long, was I would get up very early in the morning and I would write for about an hour a day. So yes, that took a lot of time. Several years ago I retired, and so that's really what gave me the push to finish the book and get it published. But since then, yes, I am writing a couple of more things. I just actually finished one that I kind of call it the Cliff Notes of the Bible. What I did was I took each book and in about a paragraph or two explained really the nuts and bolts. I call it an executive summary, because I don't know if you've ever seen an executive summary. It like
yes,
takes
I
a
have.
Whole article and puts it in a paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like that. Book a page. Then with some thought-provoking questions that are just really, I'm hoping that can just be used as a tool for someone who really is new to the Bible and wants to pick it up and sort of, before they start really tackling the text, get an idea of what the stories are about. Or if you picked up the book of, say,
ooh, it sounds like
Zechariah,
you can figure out,
okay, what is this about?
It sounds like a very meaningful project, and I look forward to visiting with you in the future about that. This, your first book, is titled Genesis, A Modern Day Commentary, and my author, Judith Fulce. Where do we get copies of your book?
Well, you can get it Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Westbow Press, but it's also out in a lot of other bookstores as well, and Christian Books is carrying it, so it's out there.
Excellent. Listeners, you may also find out about this book and others by looking up the author's name, Judith, last name F-O-L-S-E, Fulce. And this book will pop to the surface along with others. You can also order this through your local bookseller by the name Genesis, A Modern Day Commentary, and the author's name, Judith Fulce. Thank you, Judith, for joining me today and sharing your story. And best of luck in the future, if luck is part of it. God bless you and God speed you on your journey. And look forward to visiting with you again when the next commentary hits the streets.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Oh. For Indie Book Publishing, yeah. Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing. Join us again next week at noon Eastern.